Good afternoon, Wrangell. You're listening to Talk on the Rock, your local live call-in show. The time is 1 p.m. We have our guest, Clint Coleridge, in the studio today, and he is Wrangell's District Forest Service Ranger. So you can call in to ask a question or just say hi. That number is 874-2345. So, Clint, thank you for coming in today.
Hey, June, thanks for having me. I'm super happy to be here.
Right on. Thank you. Okay, so it sounds like you've been in Wrangell for about 6 months about now. Is that right?
6 months.
Cool.
Can you believe it?
Right on. Can you believe it is the question.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so yeah, I'm sure most people that interact with your office know you and have met you, but go ahead and tell the folks of Wrangell just a little bit about yourself.
So this is that question that everyone hates answering. So let's hear a little more about yourself. So do you want to narrow that down a little bit, or do we want to talk about like long walks on the beach and things like that?
So I would like to know, I mean, just where did you come from?
Cool. So about the last 25 years, I've been living in Montana with a couple of forays outside of there, a little bit to Maine, where I met my wife. And but I convinced her to leave the wet, thick environment of Maine and move to Montana. And now, ironically, I'm back in an environment that's almost exactly like Maine. So she's kind of excited about that, actually. Yeah. But Forest Service wise,
yeah,
a little bit about myself. Sure. You know, like a lot of folks in the Forest Service, I started right out of high school fighting fires. So I was a seasonal firefighter for almost a decade, mostly out of Northern California at that time. But unlike a lot of other people in the Forest Service, I did not go directly into a Forest Service career. I spent a lot of time swinging a hammer to support I had a daughter, when I was about 22 years old, and I needed to pay bills. And learning a trade was also pretty important to me. I like to do things with my hands. So I spent a lot of time working as a carpenter. We can jump forward a little bit, go past the midlife crisis and all that in the late 30s. And I realized that, you know, when I worked for the agency and fought fires, that's really what I enjoyed the most in my life up to that point. And I worked pretty hard and leveraged that fire experience to finally get an appointment down in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got my permanent appointment finally. But I'm kind of a late bloomer Forest Service wise. I think I was just turned 40 at that time. And so here I am now. If you want to jump forward, it's been a great ride.
Right on. Well, so you are the Forest Ranger here, and, you know, you are not fighting fires anymore, and I assume that your, you know, most recent work before you came here wasn't fighting fires either. So tell me, what is it that you do as a district ranger here in Wrangell?
So that's kind of an interesting story, obviously, because I think it was the first week I was here, we had a lightning fire on the island, and I was like, oh my gosh, can you believe this? I just moved to a rainforest, and one of the first things I get to deal with is a fire. So I kind of felt right at home. Mm-hmm. But, you know, overall, my duties, what I try never to forget, regardless of what I do, is as a government employee, first and foremost, we're public servants. I mean, that's what we're dedicating ourselves to. You know, and a lot of rangers, you know, they'll say, well, I administer 900,000 acres of a district. And I guess by the book, that's kind of what we do. The way I like to look at it is I'm the primary support for my staff because it's the staff that actually manages the forest. I don't run around and do that. They do all that. So I want to know what I can do, what I can get them, what I can provide for them to make them the best employee they can be. So that's how I feel about what I'm doing in my office. Secondly, I want to be a conduit of communication for the public. That's incredibly important to me. And, you know, finally, another thing I do that's fairly formal is as a district ranger, I'm part of the forest leadership team. So the leadership team is combined mostly of district rangers, staff officers, and of course the forest supervisor and deputy forest supervisors. So as a leadership team, we're the ones that grapple with things like shrinking budgets and changing priorities, and how do we fill positions when we don't have the money we used to. So those kinds of decisions and those kinds of challenges is what we work on the leadership team.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. So yeah, let's just get right into it. So, you know, you're on this leadership team, and so you play a big role in our management plan, basically carrying out the Tongass management plan that we have. And so we know that the Tongass is always changing, and the two things that are on my mind are probably on the minds of folks that live in town and care about their lands. First off, let's start with the Central Tongass Management Project. So something that is underway, and it is basically, my understanding, it is in addition to the 2016 Tongass Plan.
Okay, let's clarify a couple of things. And I also want you to hold me accountable. If I start using acronyms, you can reach over and smack me with your paper there.
Yes.
Because I want to try to avoid doing that.
Sure.
So when we talk about a forest management plan, that's different than the Central Tongass project. So a forest management plan is a guiding document that outlines our manual and policy and laws, our direction, our parameters of how we carry out forest management practices, and kind of dictates where and when and how we can do certain things. So the Central Tongass is a project. It's a forest management, in fact, I'd call it an integrated management, integrated being that it's not just about forest management, but it's also about forest rehabilitation, trying to get things righted that past management actions maybe have led to certain issues with watersheds and streams and things like that. So it's an opportunity to continue to carry out forest management, but also to do restoration of our public forest lands. So that's why I would refer to it as integrated. So with that kind of clarified, a little more specifically into the Central Tongass project, what were you thinking?
Sure. So basically, give us a sense of, you know, this is something that the public has commented on and that the Forest Service is still working through as far as what it's going to look like at the end of the day, what's actually going to happen. Give me a sense of where you guys are at in this process.
Cool. Okay. Yeah, let's talk about the process a little bit. So right now, the planning team is working on the final environmental impact statement, FEIS. So if I use the acronym, I'll try to give the real word first. So I know you and I had talked a little bit previously about different alternatives, and right now we haven't made a final decision on a quote-unquote preferred alternative, but when the final environmental impact statement comes out, which is scheduled to come out on Valentine's Day, so happy Valentine's Day, honey, here's a 400-page document to read. It's surprising I'm still married, huh? So public comments. I want to get into that. So that helps drive what alternative is chosen. And so Central Tongass is pretty distilled down. It's got three alternatives, right? It's got the no action. It's got alternative one, which is an action alternative because there's actions that will take place. And then there's a second alternative action plan. And when you choose a preferred alternative, we really depend on comments to help inform us and drive us towards what we think is the best management for the plant, for the land, but also is responsive to public's interests and wants and needs. And it doesn't mean we have to pick one or the other. So a preferred alternative, and this is where comments, this is a real life example where comments actually helped quite a bit on this. Comments have given us a lot to consider. And from the comments we've learned, or I've learned, remember, I've only been here 6 months, so I haven't taken place in a lot, or taken participation in a lot of this. But the comments have really helped us learn that there was a lot of interest and concern about Pine Marten on QU Island. And there were mitigation features listed in alternative three, specifically for Pine Marten. And a lot of people really liked that. So we, or what I believe the team is leaning towards, going with a hybrid of alternative one, but including those mitigation factors from alternative three. Excuse me, not alternative one, but going with alternative two, but including those Pine Marten mitigation features from alternative three.
Yeah, maybe just tell me, what do you mean by mitigation features?
At least it wasn't an acronym.
Yeah, you're fine.
So when we consider the effects of our actions on the environment, we'll just make it specific to Pine Marten. That's a, I don't know if it's Pacific Pine Marten or American Pine Marten. One of them is a management indicator species for the Tongass, and it doesn't matter which one. The point is, it's okay, here we are now. She's got another puzzled look on her face. So a management indicator species is a species that helps us realize thresholds. So if that population is doing well or not doing well, then that helps guide us on our activities that we're accomplishing. Obviously, we want things to thrive. So that's one of those species that helps us kind of keep our pulse on the health of the environment, if that makes sense. So the mitigation was to alter our proposed actions to benefit Pine Marten. So without getting too far into the weeds, because I'm not super familiar with it, you know, what that might look like is leaving greater amounts of productive old growth, or for another really cool acronym, POGS.
Yeah.
Right. So productive old growth. So leaving greater amounts of productive old growth in known Pine Marten habitat, and doing so at an elevation, also lower in elevation, to provide security in wintertime as well as summer habitat. So it's that would be a mitigation feature. So in alternative two, those don't exist. Not that we're not leaving productive old growth for Pine Martens, it's just a greater protection for them in alternative three. Does that help?
Yeah, it does help. Yeah. Yeah, and maybe, you know, so like you said, it sounds like you have, the Forest Service has not said which one they are preferring quite yet, but you're telling me
these folks are
leaning towards alternative two.
This is a real life example of how the comments have driven our considerations, and there's a heavy consideration being given towards a hybrid of alternative two, but including the Pine Marten.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I want to remind you and other folks who might be listening that this type of project is kind of cool, because when we go into implementation, so next summer, say we're going to go into implementation on this section of the project, section X. There's a public engagement portion to that, so it's not like nothing's set in stone at that point. We have guidelines of this is where we're going with this alternative, but when we go into the implementation in public engagement session, there's further opportunity to comment. But now we're commenting on a more site-specific area. So now we can start to drill down to what's really happening in this set of units, this unit pool that we want to do our implementation work in for this field season. So there's a whole nother public engagement session.
Yes. Yes, and this is, so, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is, like you're saying, with this implementation portion that's kind of down the road. This is kind of new. This is a new process for the Forest Service in some ways. It looks similar to the old process, but it is different.
It's different. I won't say it's new necessarily, this landscape level. Of course, now the term's going to escape me. It'll come to me, and I'll throw it back out there. But this type of NEPA has been used in other places for well over a decade. So it still meets all the intent of NEPA, but mm-hmm. it is different. And so there's, you know, anytime there's change, you know, people tend to get a little nervous. So it's not new. It's just different.
Yes. Yep. So it is a different way for the Forest Service to complete its NEPA obligations. And, you know, before we get, you know, more into maybe the alternatives and really what's in the heart of the Central Tongass project, you know, on the topic of this kind of new or, well, this different process, we know that the Forest Service has gotten into a legal impasse, which is affecting a forest sale on Prince of Wales. And the issue is around this new process. Can you just tell me a little bit about that impasse and what that means for the Forest Service?
Sure. Well, you're breaking out all the tough questions, aren't you? So I gotta say up front, because it's under litigation, there's not a lot I can say about it. But what I can say, and I'll just review a little bit, there was a preliminary injunction that was filed. I don't know when. A judge reviewed that preliminary injunction and decided to uphold it. And all I know is that the judge has said that she would make a ruling sometime in March. So, you know, people ask me, I know you and I have talked about it on the side a little bit. Well, what does that mean for Central Tongass? Is that where you're, she's nodding at me, folks. So I think I'm going down the right path. You know, what it means is we don't stop work. Just because there's a preliminary injunction and a potential or a ruling coming, there are so many different ways that could play out. But very few of them are going to be that we have to not do what we're doing. We may have to make some adjustments, and we'll do that. But our planning doesn't stop. Our intent of doing forest management, which is what we're directed to do, remains the same. And so we're moving forward with our planning on the Central Tongass. If we need to do some adaptations based on that ruling, then we'll make those adjustments when the time comes.
Okay, right on. Thank you. Yes, I was very curious, and I'm sure folks are curious. Yeah, what does that mean for this plan? I mean, this project.
You know, I will say, folks have asked me, you know, well, are you guys even paying attention? And it's like, well, yeah, totally paying attention. I mean, we don't know what's going to come out of it, but we, and let's go back to our leadership team. You know, we have those discussions. You know, we go through what-if scenarios. Because, you know, we have an obligation to do this work and carry out our forest management plan. So it's not like we just sit back and go, oh, darn, you know, we're trying to be as strategic and responsive as we possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, how so?
As far as by not ignoring it. I mean, I don't want to waste, or no one wants to waste a lot of time or money or energy guessing on things, mm-hmm. but we've been down this road with other projects, so we have an idea of how things sometimes play out, so we can anticipate certain things strategically, and I don't know specifics. I'm being very hypothetical. My point is we're just not ignoring it. We are thinking about what alternative actions we'll be able to take, when that time comes. Just want folks to know we're definitely thinking about it.
Yes, exactly. You heard it from Clint. Yeah, so, you know, aside from the impasse, you know, which has had its effects on this POW forest, forest sale. You guys are still working on the Central Tongass project. So, you know, Clint, we can go to a break here pretty soon. But, yeah, I mean, just give us a sense of, you know, what all is involved in perhaps alternative two or even alternative three of this Central Tongass project. So we know, so I'm looking at it right now. Okay. So I'm seeing that, you know, with alternative two, you know, there would be an increase in old growth timber harvest over 15 years of 150 million board feet. And then it goes down the road with young growth timber and then road construction. But we know it's not just all about timber, or that when it is about timber, that also means that there's also effects of timber that people need to be aware about. So just give me a sense of, you know, aside from 150 million board feet, I mean, what are we looking at?
So what we're looking at is, I don't have specific numbers to give you. Those are real numbers. There's analysis that's been done on that.
Uh-huh.
But when you think about the rest of the process, and when we go into our implementation phases, so like when you said, this is over the course of 15 years,
mm-hmm.
so implementation will be phased.
Mm-hmm.
So when we go into a specific area to do a phase of implementation, and we go through that public engagement process and we consider additional public comments, those numbers are going to change a little bit. So it'd be amiss of me to sit here and say, well, we're going to do this exactly, or we're going to do that exactly, because it's an iterative process. And what's really cool about this different process is that it has this additional public engagement part. Where the traditional NEPA, typically you had your comment period, and that was kind of in the objection period if it was a,
mm-hmm.
If it was a environmental impact statement, and then that was kind of it. So I really appreciate the part that we continue with the public engagement beyond just that standard NEPA part.
Yep.
So.
But this is also the part where the judge has said, yeah, the judge has said, well, you know, I don't know if people have a really good understanding of what is going to come out of this. So the Forest Service is saying, well, we want to keep people engaged throughout the whole process. But, you know, the litigation is around, well, you know, people need to know this stuff up front. But let's just go over some things. So, I mean, in the draft EIS, you know, I'm looking at, you know, the creation of jobs. There was something around, let's see. I'm seeing 582 jobs could be created from alternative two. That's a number that's put out right now. Like you said, Clint, I mean, that could change, obviously.
Sure.
There's also, maybe you can talk a little bit about watersheds, pros and how could this plan help out watersheds? How could it also, adversely impact watersheds?
So, well, you're going off script a little bit. You're going rogue on me, and she's got this evil little look in her eye. But I'm up for it. No.
I mean, I don't need the hard details, but.
No, these are good questions, Shun. So let's talk about the economics just briefly. Part of any interdisciplinary team or planning team, there's an economics portion. There's an economics person in the supervisor's office who reviews the economic impacts and how that might affect the local communities and the environment. So those numbers came forth through an economic analysis, probably done by an economist. So in my former region, I could tell you exactly who that is. I haven't met that person here yet. So those are potential realities. And I'm not an economist, but I think that in that analysis, they're not just looking at timber. They're mm-hmm. looking at a lot of different things. They're looking at the recreation side of it,
mm-hmm.
Potentially increased tourism. So I can't tell you that there'll be 400 jobs in timber and 100 jobs in customer service from, you know, from additional tourists or anything like that. But it's a ripple effect. I mean, if you think about that as like an ecosystem in itself, there's a lot of different things that come to play that create jobs. Mm-hmm. So that's where those preliminary numbers come from. You also asked about watersheds.
Watersheds potentially being restored, but also potentially seeing some adverse effects.
Sure. So, you know, forest management, it does adversely affect, right? You cut a tree down, you run heavy equipment over the ground, but there are mitigation features that come into play to reduce those effects. And it's our job, our position, to reduce those types of effects as much as possible, but it's also our job to clarify what those effects are, to disclose them to the public. That's the whole NEPA process in a nutshell, is mm-hmm. disclosing effects of the management actions. And, you know, forest management's obviously taken place for decades and decades all across the country and across the continent. As we've moved through time, science has gotten better. We've seen effects of previous actions. We've made adjustments for those. We now have, I won't use the acronym, but what something we call best management practices mm-hmm. that are set forth by the state and by the Forest Service. Mm-hmm. It depends what region you're in and how you adopt those, because they're site-specific. Site-specific usually by state. So there are now new guiding principles that help us do forest management in a much more responsible manner mm-hmm. than admittedly what we've done in the past. And I'm speaking about Forest Service actions, of course. So the restoration is, it's along the same line. So as we're doing these things, we can just give a hypothetical scenario where if we want to go into a cutting unit and the road to access that unit has old culverts, or it has issues with the way the road is sloped, so the culverts aren't functioning properly, so there's extra sediment being dumped, and the road's not, the grade of the road is wrong or has eroded over time. These are opportunities for us to go in and fix those things that will ultimately improve watershed health.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I mean, this project is about going into the forest and doing some work, and part of that work is restoring while you're in it.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. And we don't have too much time left, but
yeah, where'd that break go?
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm doing well.
And one thing I also thought was pretty cool. So, the draft EIS is saying number of cabins that could potentially be built or be accessible by road could be up to 6 cabins. I'm seeing that in both alternative, I guess in both alternative 2 and 3. So yeah.
So you want to read that again? That was pretty cool.
Okay.
Or let me see if I heard you correctly, but potentially up to 6 new cabins, is that what it said?
Number of cabins accessible by road. So either same as it is now, you know, if there was no change,
mm-hmm.
or up to 6 cabins.
Hmm.
So does that mean 6 more cabins will be accessible, or?
That's a good question.
Hmm.
And if I had a little more heads up, I would have dug deeper into that, and I would have had that answer right now for you, June.
That's not a problem.
I'm going to fall back on I've only been here 6 months, and this is a huge document, and I haven't gotten through every part of it.
Yeah.
But this is why I wish Tori Hauser was originally going to come in with me, and we were going to tag team this. And if for folks who don't know Tori, she's our rec program manager, and she's totally awesome. But we also wanted to talk about some of the cool recreation aspects on this, but I really didn't feel comfortable addressing them as well as I know Tori could, who helped write some of that.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something we can do for you in the future.
Thank you, Clint. Yeah, no, not a problem at all. But I mean, clearly more access to cabins, more than what
I like the sound of
is
that
now. Yeah. And I know that when the city wrote their comments to the Forest Service, that was one thing they mentioned. Hey, we could use more access to more cabins.
Correct me if I'm wrong. What do we have, one cabin on a road system on this district?
Yeah, you tell me.
That might be correct. I know just about everyone, including six-year-olds, own their own boats here. But it'd be nice if we had some additional access via road.
Exactly.
Remember, those things take a while to plan and take place. And remember, we talked about declining budget. So it's kind of like, if we're going to add something, what the trade-off is, what aren't we going to be able to do?
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't mean we can't do that. It just means it's just not as simple as building another cabin.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree. I think that's something that we need to definitely turn our attention to, and I think we are.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, Clint, I feel like our time is about up. You know, I had wanted to talk about roadless rule.
Oh, man.
But I don't know.
I can give you a real quick, brief rundown on it, right? Comment period's still open.
Yeah.
I do want to tell anyone who's listening that, you know, June and I sat together for most of that, those public hearings, and I was really actually extremely proud of this community. We had a great turnout, and we asked really good questions. You know, they were well thought out, they were insightful, and it just showed how much this community cared, and I just thought that was awesome. And I've had nothing to do with it. I've been here 6 months, so I'm privileged to inherit a district with people who care that much. So that was really cool. Comment period closes in mid-December. The final EIS will be out sometime in the spring. And I know you made a comment, like, people don't feel their comments are always heard. And, you know, I understand how folks feel about that. It's tough. The roadless rule is made through the decision making process is at the department level, so it's not in the Forest Service. The Forest Service is part of the Department of Ag, and the decision level lies with the Secretary of the Department. Please don't think your comments don't matter. Comments matter. So please don't get frustrated and hang in there and continue to share your thoughts with us.
Yeah, or if you're frustrated, continue to be frustrated, but still make your comment.
Hey, give me a call.
Yeah. Okay, well, Clint, thank you so much for going over some of these details with us. And yeah.
Can I close out with a public comment?
Yeah, sure.
We are planning a public workshop to learn more about our forest plan. What it means, how it works, how it drives or directs us to do what we do. This is a request that came out of, I believe, an Economic Development Committee meeting. And I think it's a fantastic idea. I don't have a time yet. I need to talk with Carol Rushmore a little bit more and some of the other folks, but we just want to open that up to anyone in Wrangell or anywhere else who's interested in coming down. We'll bring in some folks who know more about forest planning than I do. Of course, I'll be there, and we want to be responsive to that request. So I'm pretty excited about that. So look for that in the future.
You're thinking in the new year,
yes.
Or this month? Okay.
No, probably the new year.
That works just fine. Okay. Well, Clint, thank you for coming in and telling us more about your work at the Forest Service and about these really large scale projects. So thanks for getting into the weeds with me. And it sounds like, you know, if people have questions, they can give you a call.
Absolutely. And I just want to thank everyone who called in today.
You know, they're still listening.
No, I know. I'm sorry.
All right. You have been listening to Talk on the Rock, your local live call-in show. The time is 1:34, and as always, we will be back next week with another guest. See you then.